From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. This week, I decided to focus our discussion on valvular heart disease. There are several documents related to valvular heart disease that I think are very helpful, and I thought we would go over those today. The first one is the first appropriate use criteria for the treatment of severe aortic stenosis. This was a multi-societal collaborative effort. It's really the first of its kind to address the appropriate use criteria for management of severe aortic valve stenosis, and was published in JACC by Dr. Bono and colleagues in October. So several categories of aortic valve stenosis that I thought we would talk about. The first one is asymptomatic patients with high gradient severe aortic stenosis. Important to think about this group of patients. In particular, there's a group of folks who have very severe aortic stenosis measured as a Vmax greater than 5 meters per second and or a mean gradient across the valve greater than or equal to 60 millimeters of mercury and low surgical risk, for whom it is perfectly appropriate to consider prophylactic aortic valve replacement in these people. Also, for patients who appear to be asymptomatic but have high gradient severe AS, intervention is appropriate for those who have an abnormal stress test, an LVEF under 50%, or of course, if they're undergoing another cardiac surgical procedure. And remember, with the stress test, often it is simply a flattening or a fall in blood pressure, not necessarily chest pain and or dyspnea and or ECG changes. Now, there's a group of patients that you and I treat from time to time that have low flow, low gradient, severe aortic stenosis, and a reduced ejection fraction. In the AUC criteria, the authors recommended that intervention is appropriate for patients with low flow, low gradient, severe AS, and an EF of 20 to 49% if they have flow reserve on low-dose dobutamine stress echo. Also, it is reasonable to offer therapy, including balloon aortic valvotomy, for patients who don't have a flow reserve but have a very calcified aortic valve suggestive of truly severe AS. For the patients who have the worst EF, LVEF under 20%, with low flow, low gradient aortic valve stenosis, intervention may be appropriate or potentially balloon valvotomy could be considered for patients who have severe high gradient AS or for patients with flow reserve on dobutamine stress echo. It's important to note that intervention is probably not appropriate for patients who have pseudo-severe AS, that is like patients who have a low EF less than 20%, a mean gradient less than 20, and no flow reserve when you do stress echo. Now, in terms of symptomatic severe aortic stenosis with high or extreme surgical risk, the document, I think, does a really nice job of helping us think about either TAVR or surgical AVR, SAVR, in this group of patients. For a group of patients who we're going to call moderate to severe risk, that is an STS predicted mortality of 8 to 15% due to multiple comorbidities, TAVR is appropriate or SAVR may be reasonable if the life expectancy is at least a year, but neither is reasonable if the patient has a very limited life expectancy, less than 1 year. For patients in the highest surgical risk group, more than 15% mortality risk, TAVR would be appropriate if the health status appears to be influenced primarily by AS, then comorbidities, and they have an anticipated life expectancy beyond a year. For patients who are kind of intermediate risk, that 8 to 15% due to frailty with symptoms of fatigue but no chest pain, TAVR may be appropriate if the patient has an elevated BNP and it's clear that the Vmax is high, say more than 5 meters per second. And you all know that the patient who has a porcelain aorta or what we call a hostile chest, for instance, somebody who's had radiation, TAVR is highly appropriate as compared to SAVR for those individuals. Now, I like the way the document dealt also with the concomitant problem of aortic valve stenosis and coronary disease. And this really gets at the diffuseness of the coronary disease, where the left main is involved, three-vessel disease, and the syntax score. So for patients who have three-vessel CAD, SAVR and CABG is appropriate for low, intermediate, or high surgical risk, regardless of the syntax score. TAVR and PCI would be appropriate for patients at intermediate or high risk and a syntax score less than 22. That's an important point. That syntax score with three-vessel disease is a clear area where it appears that with a higher syntax score, 23 or higher, in three-vessel disease, CABG appears to be superior for life expectancy. Now, left main disease and combination with aortic valve stenosis, a surgical valve replacement and CABG would be appropriate for patients, especially if they have a high syntax score greater than 33. If they have a syntax score less than 33, then for some of those individuals, the combination of TAVR and PCI may be appropriate. Lastly, just to mention about the patient with an aortic bioprosthesis and structural valve degeneration and concomitant severe symptomatic AS or regurgitation. And this really gets at the issue of the size. So SAVR or TAVR would be appropriate for these patients if their bioprosthesis is at least 23 millimeters. SAVR is appropriate, and occasionally TAVR may be used if the bioprosthetic size is 21. But in the very small valve, the size, say, less than or equal to 19 millimeters, SAVR is by far the preferred option, and TAVR in these patients is often simply not possible. So I thought this was a very interesting document. It's really well written, and I commend the authors for this appropriate use criteria for the treatment of severe AS. And I just picked out some of the areas that I thought were particularly worthwhile for practitioners. Now, the next document I want to talk about this week is the 2017 ACC Expert Consensus Decision Pathway for the Management of Mitral Valve Regurgitation. And this was authored by Pat O'Gara and colleagues and published also on October 18th in JACC. It's a wonderful article that focuses on the decision pathway for the management of MR, talks about clinical assessment, identifying the mechanism and etiology of the MR, determining the MR severity, assessing the feasibility of surgical or transcatheter repair, and also indications for referral to a mitral valve center of excellence. A couple things I thought were very useful, of course, and when we think about MR, we're trying to distinguish primary, which is due to mitral leaflet or subvalvular apparatus abnormalities, versus secondary that could be due to left atrial or left geometric changes with a functionally normal mitral valve. Also, LV dilation or regional or global changes in LV systolic function can lead to a secondary MR. After one characterizes leaflet morphology, then leaflet motion should be described, and typically the recommendation is to use the Carpentier system. Type 1 is normal leaflet motion, type 2 excessive leaflet motion, type 3 restricted leaflet motion, and that's subcategorized as 3A, which is restricted during systole and diastole, or 3B, restricted only in systole. Now, we use various tools to assess the severity of MR, starting with color flow Doppler, but we can also use quantitative measures like effective regurgitant orifice area, regurgitant volume, and regurgitant fraction. And for pinning down kind of a final measure of how severe the MR is, a comprehensive approach is recommended in which you consider all of those various measurements integrated into a final estimation. After testing with transthoracic echo, occasionally TEE or occasionally even cardiac MR, imaging can be used when the severity of the MR remains somewhat in doubt. Decisions about the treatment, of course, are based on multiple things: the type of regurgitation, its severity, the hemodynamic consequences, the disease stage, the patient comorbidity, the status of the left ventricle, and of course, the heart valve team and its members. Principal intervention for primary MR is surgery. Transcatheter mitral valve repair using edge-to-edge clip is certainly having a role, but a very limited role right now. In contrast, the surgical treatment for secondary MR should be considered only very carefully after thinking about appropriate medical and other device therapies. This would include effective afterload reduction, diuresis, is the patient a candidate for BIV pacing, things like that. Certainly, mitral valve repair is strongly preferred over mitral valve replacement for mitral valve failure, especially that due to primary techniques. A last note about mitral valve surgery, and that is surgical experience has been recognized to be a very significant determinant for successful repair. Higher volume surgeons appear to be able to repair valves with a higher rate of success than lower valve surgeons. So certainly patients should be considered in terms of not only the approach to repair, but also in certain circumstances, referrals to an experienced valve program and surgeon appears to be very appropriate. So this is a very good document, which I think does an excellent job of reviewing strategy for evaluating the management and treatment of mitral valve regurgitation. The last piece I'll mention to you, which is on acc.org this week, is a wonderful case report titled Between a Rock and a Hard Place. And this is an elderly patient who comes in with a significant problem of mitral stenosis. And I think you'll enjoy the case. It's very well written, and documentation around it is superb. So these are three documents that we've put on acc.org this week about valvular disease that I think are extremely useful. I've tried to hit the highlights for you of both the aortic stenosis and mitral valve documents. I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from acc.org. And all of these documents are available to you on the American College of Cardiology's website. You can find us online or wherever you get your podcasts. I look forward to talking to you again next week. Thank you.